We're back. It's the top of the hour. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. I am Jim Santel. We're spending this morning talking about two very important Supreme Court cases coming out of Washington, D.C. in that high court just this past week. Most of our first hour talking about Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, the majority opinion, the concurrences, the dissents, all sending us some sense about what our Supreme Court in very different directions has told us today about privacy rights and about the right to abortion. The upshot of the opinion yesterday from the United States Supreme Court is that the Constitution, the United States Constitution, does not, in fact, confer a right to abortion. Roe versus Wade, Casey, 1992 case had followed it. Both of those explicitly, undeniably overruled. The authority to regulate abortion now returned to the people and their elected representatives. And that's the additional comment I would make before we go to more callers this morning, which we appreciate tremendously. The invocation, the application, the invitation, if you will, to legislative response is going to go in a number of different directions. As we said before the break, many states out there have laws that are effective as of this morning that prohibit abortion in America. That is a stunning reversal of where we were even 25, 26 hours ago. Other states plainly implementing changes that will move in that direction. And significantly, there are other states out there, unknown in terms of specific numbers, but probably an equal number of those who are going down this more strident road, other states firming up their rights to abortion, firming up the rights of women under their own constitutions, their own state statutes to observe and to have access to reproductive rights. And so that's happening at state legislatures around the country. That's where advocacy is all important. That's the kind of thing, candidly, that at the invitation of Justice Alito, all Americans should be taking up. The other one that's out there, of course, is that this can, in fact, this decision yesterday can, in fact, and almost is underway as a legislative response. The United States House of Representatives has already codified, if you will, in some legislation, can reintroduce that legislation in future Congresses that would codify Roe versus Wade in the federal statutes. The federal statutes. Now, that would still have to pass muster, and plainly there'd be more argument among the lawyers about that. But that is a legislative response. It could also take place at the federal level. Lots of argument, lots of discussion about that option, too. Of course, the immediate concern is what happens in the Senate, and that is why the all-important vote coming up in November, the midterm elections, that are going to decide who holds control of the House and of the Senate. That also tremendously important on this issue and many others. Just as Roe versus Wade can be codified legislatively by the United States Congress, so too can other legislation, perhaps, for example, banning all abortions statewide in all states throughout the United States of America. That too could be implemented by a federal legislature, our House, our Senate. And that is why my final observation about this before we move to at least one caller is voting. Where do you get Supreme Court justices? You get them from presidents with the advice and consent of the Senate. And where do you get presidents? You get presidents by voting through the Electoral College, as we have seen most dramatically in recent days, weeks, and years. You get presidents, you get Supreme Court justices, you get elected officials who can make decisions about legislative responses to judicial orders. You get them through voting. So voting, registration, here in Wisconsin, every other state in the union, every town, every village, every city, vote. All those who are eligible to do so should do so as a way of responding however you feel about yesterday's opinion, the other one we'll discuss in just a moment having to do with guns. Voting is the all-important avenue to address those issues and to get your voice heard to the extent you feel the United States Supreme Court and perhaps even your state or federal legislature is not listening to you. Putting those people in power who do have your voice, do have your best interests in mind, the safety and security of everyone, including health care for all women in our nation, that too accomplished through voting. Joe, we're on the line. You've been waiting for a while. Would love to hear your comments, your questions this morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Jim, and as always, I really appreciate the discussion. So I had two questions I wanted to ask, and if they have already been covered in the hour, I apologize because I came in late into your hour. So it's two questions that I would have about what is emerged from this discussion. First is, you had mentioned, and other people have mentioned, possible restrictions on interstate restrictions on travel for women that might emerge out of this decision. Oklahoma, other places that are they're taking a very strict view on this. Can you describe that, and then how that might play out, and how that might clash with, I'm stupid about this, but interstate commerce. How can women be prevented from traveling from one state to another to get an abortion in light of interstate commerce? And the second question that I would have is, many people have looked at the issue of abortion not as, you know, religious or health, but instead from the issue of bodily autonomy, meaning that no one has the right to use another person's body without that person's consent. So looking at, for example, you might need a kidney from your dad, and your dad may be the only person that can give you a kidney, and you may die if you don't get this kidney, but no one, you can't force your dad to give you even one kidney if dad doesn't want to do it. Or the idea that we can't harvest organs from a person who has died, and those organs may be used to save lives, such as donating lungs or hearts, kidneys, but we can't force that if that person has not given consent previously. So can you respond to those two questions, the one of interstate restriction of women and the question of bodily autonomy? No one has the right to use another person's body, and how that may play out in further discussions of abortion as we go forward. Thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate it. I'll listen for your response.
Thank you so much, Joe. And let me say at the outset, those are far from stupid questions, far from stupid observations. I would offer just the opposite, right on target, very intelligent as always, and appreciate your bringing us to that, those discussion points this morning. Let's talk about the first one of those, very important, the right to travel. I don't have the exact years, but I can go back and pull out a couple of cases from the late 19th century in which the United States Supreme Court said that there is a constitutional right to travel. And now this implicates a lot of things we talked about even the first hour. The word travel does not appear explicitly in the United States Constitution. It's not there. Just like the word privacy is not there, just like the word abortion is not there, all these things that the majority of the Supreme Court today seem to be relying on to strip away this fundamental right. And so the Supreme Court, and this is still good law to this day, has said that each and every one of us has a right to travel. And yes, it's premised upon Commerce Clause and interstate movement, all those kinds of good things, Joe, that you just identified. That right is inviolate. It's not there, but it's also a part of the penumbra, maybe the Ninth Amendment, maybe the 14th Amendment, other premises inside the Constitution to say you've got a right to travel. And so, Joe, to your very good question, we do have legislatures out there that even this morning, yesterday, and the days ahead are going to say, even if you are a resident of fill in the blank of your state, and you leave that state to get an abortion in a neighboring state where it is, in fact, illegal, you're violating the laws of your home state. The question is that kind of restriction on your travel constitutional? I would say, and I think an awful lot of people would say, absolutely not. Not to say that legislatures will not try to impose that kind of legislation, but their view that somehow you can restrict travel has got to be completely contrary, as you just indicated, Joe, to this fundamental right to travel. And we were seeing that, I suspect, exercised even this morning, yesterday afternoon, throughout the weekend and the days ahead, as women exercise that right to travel to places where abortion is still legal, where you can still have access to reproductive rights. That's got to be held inviolate. And so exactly right on point, important issue, the right to travel is as right to as inviolate as I would say the right to privacy is. And again, even though it's been taken a big hit yesterday, I would certainly like to think that in the America that we live in, all those other penumbered rights to privacy and other predicates for reaching that privacy, those privacy interests, those still exist, notwithstanding Justice Thomas. As to your other very good point, take a look at the dissent from Justice Breyer, and obviously joined in by Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor. Joe, that's exactly the kind of thing that they're describing. Talking about autonomy, talking about all these issues, not perhaps invoking the specific examples that you've invoked about organ donation or compelling someone to give up a kidney or another organ, but the spirit, the content of what you just articulated is precisely the example that the dissenting justice voices articulate in saying the majority has got to be wrong. Think about all these other areas in medical care, in medical treatment, where we would never even think, we never even think of imposing governmental restrictions upon the decision of an individual. Women, men, frankly, and the supervision of parents and other guardians, young people, boys and girls, medical decisions of all sorts that go to your autonomy, your bodily function, your bodily integrity. We would not even think of going to our major medical institutions, our research institutions, and saying, you know what, government is going to come in and tell you exactly what you can and cannot do. Those discretionary decisions have got to be made by individuals. And so, Joe, to put it very pointedly, what's the difference? What is the difference between that and what we're doing here? I would offer, and again, the dissenting justices bring this point home, there should be none. There should be no difference between those two things. And it is the argument that I would offer should be made now to those state legislatures that are considering changes in one direction or another in the wake of Dobbs. It should be the argument that we advance to our federal Congress, our House of Representatives, our Senate, in which we say once again, decisions about health care, decisions about your body, the most private thing you can possibly do, secondary to your home, right? Decisions you make that have to do with your family, your interpersonal relations, all those kinds of things, those have got to be held inviolate. And that has been the increasing arc of history throughout our American history as we go forward. So, Joe, appreciate the comment very, very much. And look forward to other questions and comments by other listeners at 844-967-2789. As we come back, we'll finish up this discussion and move on to the other major case of the United States Supreme Court this past week, Bruin, having to do with firearms in America at the Shaw, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. This is Jim Santel. We are in our second hour this morning, moving shortly into a discussion of a second major Supreme Court case coming out of Washington, D.C. just this past week, a case called Bruin, implicating Second Amendment rights. That happening on Thursday, Dobbs happening on Friday. But before we go to that particular discussion, let's take one more caller. Jack is calling in. Jack, your comment, your question, your observation here this morning.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I'd say this is definitely not a conservative court. In my opinion, the correct term is reactionary. Mm-hmm. At a minimum, they've set Americans' human rights back 50 years. And in Wisconsin, they've set us back about 175 years. Secondly, this is the first time in my over 7 years that I've seen the court take away human rights. It seems to me that the founding fathers gave America the greatest human rights that their current society could handle. And that implies they intended the exact opposite to happen, to increase the rights as society changes over time. It appears that the only right that they want to increase is the right to carry a gun. And finally, I seem to recall seeing old West movies, and I don't know if these are if they're accurate or not. But in these movies, when anyone came into town, they couldn't carry guns. The local sheriff required them to check the guns with the sheriff in order to avoid gunfights in the streets. This court, if it existed in the late 1800s, it seems they would have even declared that unconstitutional. So
Jack,
we have a pretty outrageous. court.
All good observations, including your observation about language. You know, we talk about conservative, liberal justices. I think you're absolutely right that those terms sometimes are misleading, especially with respect to particular alliances and how the justices decide. Your second and third points are even more important, right? That when it comes to understanding what should be going on in America today, this Supreme Court is out of step, at least from my perspective. I suspect yours as well. And also, Jack, your comment is a great segue into our discussion about this case coming out of New York called Bruin. We discussed this matter, this litigation coming up to the United States Supreme Court in our very first show early June in this sequence, and talked about the predicates for it. We recall well that 14 years ago in a case issued by a majority of the Supreme Court, by Antonin Scalia, a case called Heller, the United States Supreme Court said the first time in its history that individuals have an individual personal right to gun ownership in their homes for self-defense purposes. And the question for the past 14 years is, does it extend beyond the homes? We chatted about this at great length this past week, right before the decision yesterday in Dobbs. The Supreme Court issued another opinion in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Kevin Bruen, B-R-U-E-N. Comes out of New York, and it is premised upon a century-old act called the Sullivan Act. Place responsibility in local law enforcement, some discretionary judgment to grant concealed carry weapons or authorizations to citizen applicants. And the significant part of that was, as we know from the litigation in Bruin and certainly the opinion issued on Thursday, was that the law, the state law, much, Jack, as you just indicated with respect to those old Western towns, required a demonstration, this is the language of the law, a demonstration of a special need for self-protection distinguishable from that of the general community or of persons engaged in the same profession, namely a kind of a clearly stated non-speculative need for self-defense, vesting again in local authorities the decision to keep us, the discretion, the judgment, the inclination to keep us very much safe and secure on our streets by making those all-important calls. And so, again, that was out there for about 100 years. There are about 6 or 7 other states that have similar discretionary practices and policies for granting concealed carry permits, and we can chat more about that and open carry and the differences between those two things. This past Thursday, the United States Supreme Court, major Second Amendment case. I would offer it's the bookend to Dobbs in terms of what this Supreme Court is doing in America. Under the Second Amendment, found that right that was established, again, for the first time in 200 years, 14 years ago, to establish individual gun ownership in the home now extends beyond the home. And that with respect to New York and similar regimens of oversight by government cannot take a look at, cannot analyze the specific reasons for a request. What's called a proper cause requirement. In other words, coming forward and saying, this is the reason why I want this particular gun in this particular area. Governments, local authorities, state authorities cannot invoke a proper cause requirement that it violates the Constitution. As the Supreme Court, in this instance, a majority, once again, in the case authored by this time by Justice Thomas, says that requirement, that proper cause approach, violates the Constitution by preventing law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs from exercising their Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms in public for self-defense. A huge expansion of that right under the Second Amendment. Goes on to say, this is again Justice Thomas now writing for a majority of the Supreme Court, says that the amendment, the Second Amendment, is the very product of an interest balancing by the people. In other words, you don't have to have local authorities, you don't have to people contemporaneously looking at these things. The Second Amendment by its very nature establishes your right if you, in fact, you abide by maybe certain procedural administrative processes. It establishes that right in the very text, the very language of the Second Amendment, and it surely elevates this above all other interests, the right of law-abiding, responsible citizens to use arms for self-defense. That's the United States Supreme Court, again, on Thursday of this week, an opinion, again, following up on Dick Heller and Justice Scalia in this case called Bruin, a very, very significant case. The majority opinion, again, authored by Justice Thomas, joined in by Chief Justice Roberts, Justices Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. The Second Amendment right to carry arms in public for self-defense is no different and is also supported by history. A huge amount of attention in that case to the text, once again, of the Second Amendment, to history, and also taken by the dissent, which we'll talk about right after the break, to contest this finding that Second Amendment rights should be broadened even more than they are into the public domain. We'll chat more about that right after the break. Jack, we appreciate your call, as always, and we're taking more phone calls here at WAUK 540 AM 101 FM right after the break here at the show in Waukesha. This is Jim Santel. We're chatting this morning about major Supreme Court cases of just the past 48 hours, including Dobbs at the start of the program this morning. And now we're chatting about Bruin, this Second Amendment case coming out on Thursday that expands dramatically our understanding of the Supreme Court's understanding and therefore understanding of what the Second Amendment does and does not mean in America. I don't need to tell anybody listening this morning about the significance of the horror, the catastrophe, the destruction that firearms in America are causing to our population. Recent reliable statistics, over 7,300 interpersonal firearms deaths to date this year alone in 2022. That does not include law enforcement deaths, defensive firearms uses, unintentional shootings. Over 300 people killed in mass shootings, meaning a shooting involving death or injury involving four or more people. Those are stunning statistics in America and underscoring once again our need desperately to address our firearms problem, our challenge in America. In the midst of that, the United States Supreme Court on Thursday issues this opinion expanding Second Amendment rights, admittedly probably impacting most directly New York and a few other states out there that have these so-called may-issue discretionary licensing processes, but along the way, some fairly broad language about what the Second Amendment means in America today. That language, authored this time in the majority by Justice Thomas, joined in by the Chief Justice and others. The Chief Justice and Brett Kavanaugh, another justice on the Supreme Court, also issue some very important concurrences. In other words, they're agreeing with the result, again, a 6-3 result to expand this understanding of the Supreme Court to take it beyond just the home into public places, presumably secure places, but nonetheless public places. But both Justice Kavanaugh and the Chief Justice underscore the fact that there is a distinction between these discretionary may-issue licensing regimes that New York has and other states do not, and the so-called shall-issue states, where, for example, the process is simply administrative, getting some training, filling out a form, maybe filing a fee, those kinds of things, where you don't have to do a kind of a good cause showing, a proper cause showing. They make that distinction, which perhaps gives us a little bit of solace about the impact of this Second Amendment ruling. I would offer that even more important than that, and take a look at their concurring opinions. Both Justice Kavanaugh and Chief Justice Roberts underscore once again this all-important language that we chatted about the very first show of our program here in June, Morning Cannolis. We talked about this language. What does Heller say? Nothing about the Supreme Court cases, including this one this past week in Bruin, including 14 years ago in Heller, restricts the capacity of responsible, reasonable elected officials, appointed officials, to impose, to establish, to create reasonable, rational restrictions, conditions, understandings about all sorts of things related to firearms. That's in Heller, and that is repeated by the United States Supreme Court, at least with respect to these two justices in Bruin. What does that say? A reasonable, rational restrictions and conditions on everything from the manufacture, the transfer, the sale, the ownership, the operation, the use, the carry of firearms, all those kinds of things can be subject to rational, reasonable limitations by legislatures. And that's what we need to go forward on. Interestingly, this time concurring also, Justice Alito saying that the holding in Bruin, again, expanding the understanding of the Second Amendment beyond the home into public venues, nothing about that restricts in any way the capacity of legislatures to do just that, to impose reasonable restrictions that may be imposed on the possession or carrying of guns. That's Justice Alito speaking again 48 hours ago. Likewise, Amy Coney Barrett takes sort of an academic shot, if you will, a little bit at the majority, with which she otherwise confers, and says the court is careful to caution against giving post-enactment history, that is the recent legislation, more weight than it can rightly bear. And so what she's saying there is this focus on history, this focus that Justice Thomas and the other justices advocate for, and this focus on text need to be understood in broader contexts as well. So all of that very good language in the midst of a very, very broad statement by the majority of the Supreme Court, again, adopting a very textual approach to the Second Amendment and focusing a huge amount on history, history, history. And that brings me to the dissents, which, again, we've got the same three. Again, Justice Breyer, probably anticipating his departure from the court, writes a second major, major dissent in this case called Bruin. He once again is joined by his colleagues, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, just as they did in the abortion case, Dobbs. And he says that cataloging and describing the recent catastrophic history of Americans' gun violence should basically tell us all the things we need to know. He invokes those same statutes that I talked about just a few moments ago from the CDC and from other authorities, talking about what's going on today in America. Again, once again, making the Constitution living and real, a breathing document today. And he describes the majority opinion as failing to consider the deadly consequences of its decision. He also goes on to say that, you know what, it's entirely appropriate for the courts to review reasonable, rational limitations on guns based upon rational, reasonable purposes for government. And what are those purposes? Safety and security, right? Keeping us all safe and secure, keeping us healthy. And he says that that analysis is the one that should hold, not this overly wrought focus on history and on text. He does, for what it's worth, go back along with his associate justices, Sotomayor and Kagan, and takes on Justice Thomas in all these areas, the colonial area, the early days of our nation, the 19th century, the 20th century. And he describes in his codification, I would offer a more accurate codification of history, all it is that he sees in that history that supports a much more limited understanding of the Second Amendment. He plainly would not embrace the broader articulation of the Second Amendment that the full court today, yesterday, the day before, has embraced and deposited into our jurisprudence. Goes on to say that I fear that it will often prove difficult to identify analogous technological and social problems from medieval England, the founding era, or the time period in which the 14th Amendment was ratified. Laws addressing things, including ancient weapons, will be of little help to courts confronting
modern problems. Again, that is a straight shot at the majority, saying, you know, this focus you have on the history and not thinking about what America is confronting today, that's wrong. And simply going back to the past is not going to provide courts, lower courts, appellate courts, even a future Supreme Court, a sufficient basis upon which to decide future cases. And again, here's the language of the dissent. The history, our American history, they say, seems to establish a robust tradition, this is the dissent, of regulations restricting the public carriage of concealed firearms to the extent that any uncertainty remains. That uncertainty counsels against relying on history alone. Again, taking on the majority, saying, no, you cannot simply focus on history. That does not give you proper judicial guidance for the present and the future. And finally, to the same point, this wonderful, lofty language coming from the dissent. Admittedly, this is not the language of the majority. This is not the law in the Supreme Court today. But nonetheless, listen to the language. It is appropriate to look beyond history and engage in what the court calls means end scrutiny, that is, finding out what the end is to keep us safe and secure, and determining whether the government, a local government, a state government, has invoked some rational means of getting us there. Means end scrutiny. Courts must be permitted, the dissenters say, to consider the state's interest in preventing gun violence, the effectiveness of the contested law in achieving that interest, the degree to which the law burdens the Second Amendment right, and if appropriate, any less restrictive alternatives. That's in the dissent, joined in by two other justices, written by Justice Breyer as he begins to look to his last days on the court. A major, major case. Again, in about six or seven other states beyond New York, this will continue to be significant, but we will look to more of that and a more greater understanding of exactly what Bruin means. And we'll talk about our next programs right after the break here in the Shaw. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Taking your phone calls also at 844-967-2789. Back. This is Jim Santel. Morning Cannoli is chatting this morning about two major Supreme Court cases, Dobbs having to do with abortion rights, Bruin having to do with firearms rights in America. Also taking your phone calls. And as we go into our final minutes here, we're also taking a phone call from Mark. Mark, glad you're calling in. What's your comment or thought this morning?
Yeah, I'm kind of horrified by both the decisions. Even though I'm a gun owner, I don't feel the need to, pack everywhere, because that was not good for the old West. And I mean, that I don't know what these guys are thinking, that it's going to actually improve safety on the street, because I just don't see that happening. For the abortion thing, I think that's just tragic that they failed to recognize how our society is involved and how opinions have changed on that. But one thing that gets me is the complete, that these guys, that these strict traditionalists on the Supreme Court, that they failed to recognize the warnings our founders gave us about, the potential for bribery of judges and such, because they've abandoned the code of ethics. I mean, here in the state of Wisconsin, they have somebody who's likely to be either a defendant or a plaintiff on the Supreme, before the Supreme Court, writing the code of ethics for that court, and that for their whole recusal,
right,
rules that they used to follow are just simply not followed anymore. Because Clarence Thomas should certainly be recusing himself from some of these cases that. But he simply doesn't. And Amy Coney Barrett, it is just sad that they, that they think, that they're high and mighty judges, but they're going like they're a anointed by God, like the judges we had under the kings, that it was their way, and the, and what they did was coming from that divinely ordained, and in this country we ordained, we the people ordain our magistrates.
And they come, as I said before, through the elective process, right? These are appointed, but many of our judges and justices, including right here in Wisconsin, are elected. And I just want to underscore the importance, not only of your first points about Dobbs and Bruin, I concur in that, and again, changing dramatically our life here. But beyond that, your very important point, Mark, about the importance of having respect for our judiciary. A previous caller talked about that as well. And when there are reasons to doubt the impartiality, the things that justices should bring and should not bring to their decisions, that tends to undermine everything that happens after that. And so this ethics issue that you raise with respect to certainly Justice Thomas, but frankly to every judge, every justice out there who should not be deciding cases in which they have a personal, marital interest, financial interest, those kinds of things, by ensuring that those are enforced, what do? You also give more legitimacy to people looking at the court and saying, when they do in fact issue opinions, even ones with which I do not concur, I will still observe those, I will follow those, and I respect those. When those ethics issues, Mark, that you talk about are not in fact advanced, and I have to believe that Justice Roberts right now, among other things, is taking a very close look, and hopefully at some point soon will be telling us more about the rules as with respect to his own colleagues on the Supreme Court, those kinds of things have got to be observed, and again, adding more legitimacy to our courts, even in times, as you indicated, Mark, when we have reason, you and others reason to suspect the motives and the legitimacy of those opinions coming forward. So, Mark, we appreciate your comment this morning. We're going into our final moments here. A few other observations today about what we have talked about and looking forward in particular. This past week was not the only cases decided. A handful of other cases of frankly, maybe not the dramatic impact, but very important to the litigants involved, very important to other areas of the law. And I wanted to indicate that beyond what we have talked about today, next week, we're going to be spending some time chatting about the entire term. Why? Because the Supreme Court, in the wake of its issuance of Dobbs and Bruin and this handful of other cases just this past week and in previous weeks, has indicated that on Monday the 27th, 2 days from now, it's going to be issuing more opinions coming out. By my math, and again, my arithmetic may not be perfect, but my math is that there are 7 more cases to be issued yet. And again, they may not fall at the high levels of Bruin and Dobbs, but they should, if you will. Let me identify once again, as we did at the last show, 3 of those 7, and perhaps chat about some of those in particular. We've got other issues related to religion and immigration, and also the environment. What are those cases? You've got a case called West Virginia versus EPA. Has to do with the EPA rulemaking authority for greenhouse gases. We chatted last time about the disagreements between the Trump administration, the Obama administration, the Biden administration, in this very important area of executive authority to make decisions about environment at a time when we're all concerned about climate change. The Supreme Court's going to tell us, presumably maybe as soon as Monday, what the executive can and cannot do, a hugely important case. We've got another case involving prayer, school prayer. It's Kennedy versus Bremerton School District out of Seattle. Question about whether or not a coach who has been praying after football games in the 50-yard line, whether that kind of religious exercise is indeed protected by the First Amendment, or whether the Establishment Clause, also of the First Amendment, enables the authorities there, the school district, to say, you know what, that kind of very public prayer, also involving all members of the football team on the field itself in a very public arena, that violates and impinges upon the Establishment Clause. And we're establishing religion by permitting you to do that. A very, very important issue, a very important analog to another case that they decided just this week, coming out named Carson versus Macon. We'll chat about that, also having to do with Maine. So you've got already an environmental case. You've got this religious case also coming up, perhaps as soon as Monday.
And then there's also the so-called Remain in Mexico case, and this immigration case, specifically environmental issues, also going to be decided by the United States Supreme Court perhaps as soon as Monday, having to do with whether or not the Remain in Mexico policy put in place by the Trump administration, an attempt to rescind that, to overturn that, formerly called the Migrant Protection Protocols, overturn that, reverse that, so that asylum seekers can, in fact, remain in the United States while their asylum applications are pending. Who has the authority to do that, and what is the right decision there? The United States Supreme Court, probably on Monday or maybe later in the week, if they decide to add yet another opinion day, will be deciding those cases: immigration, religion, and environment. Very, very important cases. And yes, there are four others out there having to do with war powers, having to do with sentencing under the First Step Act, having to do with a jurisdiction of the courts in some due process issues, and also sentencing for doctors prescribing prescriptions in America. So four other cases that may not seem as important as they may appear just in that very, very overstated and very expansive description of them, but also coming out, seven more cases yet to be heard by the United States Supreme Court, yet to be decided by the court, probably as soon as Monday of this coming week. And so the upshot of all of this is that we do have a court in the mid part of our year of June of 2022 that is going to be ending its term very, very soon. Justice Breyer is going to be resigning from the court. Once all of these cases have been decided, we know well that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson then is going to be formally sworn in to take his place on the court. Will probably not be affecting, almost certainly not affecting, the balance, if you will. We talked today about this 6-3 majority with respect to both Dobbs and Bruin. That is not likely to be affected by her replacement of Justice Breyer on the court. But nonetheless, an arrival in October of a new justice is going to change the composition and presumably some of the deliberation on the Supreme Court. We look forward to Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's entrance onto the court and her involvement in the discussions that do in fact take place on issues like the environment, like immigration, like religion, and yes, also privacy rights and gun rights, abortion rights in America. All those things coming up, a reason once again to continue to be focused on all of this and to underscore once again the point that I made a number of times today. To the extent that we are concerned about issues before the United States Supreme Court, and specifically the decisions, the resolutions of those issues that are being made on a regular basis, what is the solution? In part, absolutely, the things that we're seeing right now in America, this very hour, as people are now coming out of their work week and identifying the things we've talked about this morning, taking to the streets in peaceful protest of what government, this particular branch of government, has done. There are protests in both directions, as we've seen on Capitol Hill, right in front of the United States Supreme Court, right here in Wisconsin and other states throughout the union on these cases. That is appropriate. Also appropriate to advocate to our legislatures as we go forward. There is a role to play for the legislature. There's a very important role to play for executives as well, governors, presidents, others in appointed positions in the executive branch, who are all important when it comes to our understanding and the things we want seen in our nation as we continue to address issues related to our safety, our security, and our well-being. It continues to be my great pleasure. I want to once again thank Mike Crute and the entire team here at WAUK The Shaw for giving me this opportunity to spend some time with you every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, chatting with you about the important issues in government, in politics, in law, and the aspiration for justice in America. We will continue this again next Saturday, continuing to take your questions, your comments. In the meantime, be well, be safe, and as a part of our general commission to the future, let us be a part of our government. Let's ensure that that our voices are heard at all levels, local, state, and federal, in all branches of government. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me today. Looking forward to your discussion and your engagement next week as well. Take care, everybody.